Mexico, Phil Hendry.
It is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. What?
Well, you stopped for a moment. What was wrong?
I thought I started hearing the first notes of Reach Out, I'll Be There. I don't know.
What's that?
It's a song. I just all of a sudden thought I heard it and I stopped. I was jarred. I was frightened. I thought I was having maybe a stroke, maybe an aneurysm, maybe...
No, aneurysm is...
It's not what you think. They were asking me earlier, an aneurysm, is that something to do with a wedding?
An anniversary?
That's what they said.
Who? I don't know. Yeah, I know you don't know. Aneurysm is a physical, explosively dangerous event where a blood vessel bursts. It ain't somebody's anniversary party, okay?
Well, you don't have to make it sound like we're completely stupid.
You guys are pretty stupid. I mean, you would admit that, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Is an aneurysm someone's anniversary? Anyway, welcome to the program here. We're online at philhenryshow.com as well. I'm Phil Hendry. That's Robert Leonard and Bud Dickman. And I got to remember to work the mic close because,
What was the problem with the...
Well, I just listen to the podcast sometimes. It sounds a little hollow, so we have a unidirectional mic. It's a bunch of technical stuff. Never mind. Forget that I brought it up, all right? Tonight on the program, we are going to bring on Bobby Dooley. She's going to talk a little bit about her forthcoming podcast, which should be exciting. As a matter of fact, Ms. Dooley will be in the podcast studio next week for the Bobby Dooley podcast. And get a load of this lineup, Margaret. Patty Arquette.
She's adorable. I love Patty Arquette.
Patty Arquette. Sugar Ray Leonard.
And he is what?
Prize fighter, one of the great middleweights in the history of...
Whoa here, Sunshine.
Don't call me Sunshine.
Well, what about Roberto Duran?
Forget about that, okay? That was back in the 80s. I mean, there's been middleweights since then, and I don't want to get into a whole discussion of prize fighting. What is it with you guys?
Well, also, I think he's a welterweight, but...
Whatever. So, Sugar Ray Leonard, George Lopez.
Oh, he's wonderful.
George Lopez and Joel McHale from Talk Soup and Community and so many other things. So, Bobby's got a Rip Snortin' podcast going to be rolling out, and you'll be able to access that through our website at philhenryshow.com. All right. Now, we were talking Super Bowl, and I think this is the point. What happened to these glasses, bud? What the hell did you do, man?
I sat on him, but I didn't sit on him on purpose, and he told me to sit down, and...
When he told you to sit down, did it mean you go ahead and sit down without looking at what it is you're sitting on?
No, but I didn't know they were there.
Why were they there?
That's a good point. Why did you put the glasses, Phil?
I did not remember putting the... All I know is these things are busted now. Not too busted that I can't use them, but... Sorry, bud, that I put them, under your...
Well, the only thing about that, were you reaching down when I was sitting down?
What do you mean?
Well, if you...
How come you always answer for him?
Because he has a hard time articulating what he wants to say. I'm just saying, when you put the glasses on the seat...
Yeah.
Did you reach down as his... I mean, there's no way to say it, but it was his butt lowering down while your hand was there.
What are you trying to say?
What are you trying to say?
I'm not saying it's gay. I'm saying that were you just trying to pinch?
So in other words, I had my hand down on the seat, putting the glasses there so I could pinch your ass?
I'm just asking that. He didn't want to ask.
Are you nuts, man? Are you out of your mind?
You were playing a joke.
Okay, let's think about this. Let me take my glasses, put them on that seat as Bud is beginning to sit down. Two things will happen, and they're both really great. My glasses will get broken, and I'll be able to pinch Bud's ass. Is that it?
Well, I mean, you put it like that.
That does sound...
I don't know. Let me give it some thought.
Yeah, you go ahead and think about that, man. That's a real good job for you, okay?
Don't have to be sarcastic about it. It's just a thought.
Yeah, it was a thought that was about 3 seconds worth, and you guys have turned it into an entire discussion. I think I'll put my glasses here.
All right.
Hey, I think I'll put my glasses here, and I can get them broken as Bud sits on them, and I'll be able to pinch his ass. Okay, so,
Well, don't talk about it that much. Sounds like you're in the closet or something.
Bud, quit while you're ahead, man, okay? Just quit while you're ahead. As Margaret said yesterday, quit while you're ahead.
Or you'll be ahead.
Or you'll be ahead. Thank you, Margaret. Hey.
Very good, Ms. Greg.
Thank you. I like that. And you quoted that on the Facebook fan page, didn't you?
I did. And it's also on our homepage at the Phil Henry Show website. Quit while you're ahead or you'll wind up ahead. I think that's a beautiful thing. All right. So we were discussing Super Bowls, and it goes without saying that the game has obviously been played for a long, long time. But did you know, and I'll bet you anything that you did, if you're of a certain age, you didn't know this, that just about every Super Bowl, and if anybody disagrees with this, they didn't watch any Super Bowls, I'm telling you right now. Every single Super Bowl, just about with maybe one or two exceptions, until the late 90s, so I'm talking about a 30-year span, sucked. And I mean they were terrible games. Terrible games.
Yeah, no, are you saying because they were one-sided?
They were absolutely one-sided. They featured one. It was always a team that dominated the other team. The other team looked like they never belonged on the field. The other team always looked like... I'll give an example of a horrific Super Bowl. Boring, lousy, rotten, unless you were a Miami Dolphin fan. The Dolphin-Minnesota Viking Super Bowl. That sucked. There was a couple of meetings between the Steelers and the Cowboys, and they were decent, but they were not what I would call, you know, cliffhangers. At a certain point in the game, one team had it on the other team. You know, some of these games... Then there was the San Francisco-Denver game in 89. Oh, my God!
What was that?
That was a 52-10 or something wipeout.
52?
Yes. Yes, and that wasn't the only one. The Bears against the Patriots. You know, New England today, folks, this is a New England team that's well-coached. It's a great ball club. There was another New England team that went to the Super Bowl. There was the New England team of Raymond Berry. He was a head coach. He was a former wide receiver in the NFL, a great one, a Hall of Fame wide receiver. But he took over as a head coach of the New England Patriots in the 80s. And they won the conference. And they won the conference with Tony Eason, who was part of that 83 quarterback class, the quarterback class that everybody talks about. And now we've got a quarterback class that we're looking at here with Cam Newton and guys like that, Kaepernick. Although I wouldn't say Kaepernick was part of that quarterback class. But you know what? Sanchez isn't any good. But I'll tell you one thing. Tony Eason was great in college. Todd Blackledge was great in college. They came into that quarterback draft of 83, and they both blew. And I mean, woo! They sucked.
Yeah, but they had John Elway and Marino.
Yeah, they had John Elway, Marino. They had the other guy, too.
What other guy? Steve Young.
Yeah.
Steve Young. It was a great... In any event... The games just were lousy, but the Patriots got their ass handed to them by the Chicago Bears. That was another example of a rotten game. That the New York Giants Super Bowls were so lousy. Yeah, they had the one where the guy missed the kick. I mean, do you know that was like, 13-13 game or 13-10 or something like that? Back when they had these defensive Super Bowls, it just wasn't interesting. I'm telling you right now, I've watched every single Super Bowl. And I mean, since I was 14, and I'm now 60. Can you dig that? I mean, so in other words,
God, man, that, are you kidding?
I'm not kidding. I was 14 years of age when the first Super Bowl was played, and now I'm of the big six, and here I am into my next Super Bowl. I've watched them all. The best one I ever saw was the first one that I think it was the first Tom Brady Super Bowl. I know it was the first Tom Brady Super Bowl because he came in relief of Drew Bledsoe, and he blew everybody away. It was like, what the hell? Who's this guy? You know, and I mean, there was like two or three. There was 2 minutes left in the game, and it was going to go into OT. It was a great Super Bowl, and Brady comes onto the field, and man, he just lit the place up. Somebody asked me today, who's the greatest quarterback in the NFL, in NFL history? I said, well, to me, any quarterback, the first thing, I don't give a damn how many Super Bowls he wins because it's a team game. I don't care how many touchdowns because, you know, what I think shows a quarterback's mettle is the two-minute drill.
Now, what is the two-minute drill? Because I know I'm out of my element here, but when you say that, again, and I know I'm being picky, but I saw... Bud, and I know you have a lazy eye, but you looked me up and down. Is the two-minute drill...
No, Margaret, it has nothing to do with sex.
All right.
Yeah. But I mean, there probably is one.
There, yes. I don't want to say how I know, but there is a, and you can ask Dr. Ruth, there is a two-minute drill that has nothing to do with
it. What is that about?
It's for husbands and wives who have children and they don't...
Don't have a lot of time.
Yes.
They don't have a lot of time, huh? Okay. The two-minute drill. I never heard that before.
Well, do you have children?
I did.
Did you ever...
You know what? I'm not going to comment.
Well, okay. Little Lord Fauntleroy Boyle.
All right. Take it easy, Margaret, will
you? No, you take... I'm talking about family sex. I'm not talking about sex. This is family sex.
Oh, great. That's a great title.
Do you honestly think that I sat down and I watched that mom on boy porn, and I got my ideas from that?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Wait. What do you mean mom on boy porn?
Because you're giving me this look like that's what's on my mind when I said family sex.
All I'm saying is, let's not call it that. I don't like calling it that. It gives me the creeps. This whole topic's given me the creeps. I was talking about football. I was talking about a two-minute drill, and you dragged it by the throat into the swamp of sex.
Well, you did, Ms. Bray.
Yeah, you took the whole topic by the throat, and you sodomized the topic by...
I ought to kick your...
Hey, go on. Go to the bathroom.
No, I'm just going out to have a cigarette.
I didn't even know that Margaret smokes. We'll be right back with more on the Super Bowl football. We have Bobby Dooley later on in the program. We have Dr. Jim Sadler as well. And more news on that. There's a lot of football news with this Monty Teo guy, and I don't know how much more we can stand talking to him. We'll be back. World-famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show.
Welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. We had the DDR audio up. You're supposed to take care of that, Robert.
Sorry.
And by that, I mean we have a beach loop. There's a beach scene behind us. The outside microphone was on, so people were hearing on our videocast. They're listening to the sounds of the waves, which can be relaxing, but and it can also be irritating because they're trying to hear what I'm saying. So, welcome back to the program, or 877-876-PHIL. I just wanted to briefly touch on Lance Armstrong, if you'll pardon the expression. Lance Armstrong finally cracked, if you'll pardon that expression.
Well, what do you... If you say that, you're pointing out how filthy it sounds.
All right, I'm sorry.
You have a cigarette?
Do you want one?
No, I just said, did you have your cigarette?
Yes, I had my cigarette.
When did you... I didn't know you smoked.
I do, occasionally. I have Pall Mall Straits.
Pall Mall Straits. Man, you are...
No, I'm not, no.
Well, only dock workers...
Let me tell you something. If you call me a dock worker, you smile when you say that.
Well, I mean, how you smoke a non-filter thing, anybody know?
What?
He's saying, how can you stand smoking a non-filter cigarette?
Well, why do you have to interpret?
Because you don't... Listen to people, Margaret. You're smoking a non-filtered Pall Mall. That thing is, like, deadly.
Oh, listen to Mr. Three-Pack-A-Day.
You're right. I was. I didn't smoke non-filters, though. I mean, I'm not saying that I'm better than you. I'm not saying you're worse than me. I'm just saying that's a pretty... That's a heavy smoke.
I've been smoking Pall Mall since I was 13. Well, I've been...
You smoked when you were 13.
Phil said that he smoked when he was 14.
Yeah, I did. But you were always holding yourself up as...
I don't hold myself up as anything, and I don't smoke that much. I have a cigarette probably every few days.
I didn't know that. I mean, that's... I think if you can do that, that's good. I don't know too many people... That can smoke that way.
That's why most people are gasping for air and winding up in iron lungs, and the only thing that's left of them are their lungs, and that's in a jar in some medical school. Do you remember a guy by the name of Rick Schaefe? Rick Schaefe, S-C-H-A-E-F?
Yes.
He had a chain of radio stations.
Yeah.
The only thing left of Rick is his right lung. And it is at Johns Hopkins right now. How about that? Put that in your pipe and smoke it.
Well, what do you mean the only thing left of him?
He got cremated. You know what?
He got, Rick Schaaf got cremated.
Yeah, they cremated him, and then they dumped him out there past, probably just off of Goonberry Point, you know, out there in the Chesapeake Bay.
How do you guys know all this stuff?
Because they pay attention to industry news. Rick Schaaf was cremated. They dumped him. But they said, look, get him out and do the ceremony, whatever you do. But as soon as he gets dumped, we need to have that lung, and we need it now. And
well, isn't that something that you would get from the coroner's office?
What do you mean I'd get it?
Margaret, what I'm saying is, if I don't understand that.
Rick Schaaf, he died from lung cancer.
I know that.
All right. They cremated him. Well, first thing they did is they got the lung, because they wanted to take the lung over to Johns Hopkins Medical School so all the doctors and stuff, the people going to be doctors, could take a look at it.
Yeah, they want to look at it and figure out and see what it looks like.
Yeah, I get it, okay? I know all of that stuff.
Right. So they got the lung, and I guess they had it in refrigeration or something?
Yes, they had it in refrigeration, and they said, well, look, we got to go out and do this ceremony with the ashes.
Wait. Why couldn't they just go ahead and take the lung back to...
Because one of the doctors who was going to transport that and was a part of the medical college there was also a very dear friend of Rick's. And he was in charge of transporting the lung. So the lung's in his car. Rick's in the trunk. All right.
When you say in the trunk.
Yeah, the bag of what was Rick.
Yeah, what Rick used to be was in a plastic bag in the trunk.
What Rick used to be. In other words, his ashes.
Yeah.
Okay.
What are you getting so upset about, Phil?
It just sounds disrespectful. The bag of what Rick used to be.
Well, whatever they was able to sweep out.
Yeah, they whisked out whatever they could find on the grate, and that's Rick.
Don't you think that sounds disrespectful?
Why?
They whisked out whatever was left on the grate, and that's Rick.
Well, Phil, you know what? The truth hurts, you know? Karma's a bitch. All that stuff. I don't know if that... Anyway, can I finish?
Go ahead.
So they went out, you know, and they had the Padre, Dominus Vobiscum, whatever the hell. They dumped the ashes real fast. They got to get the lung, Phil.
The lung was everything. The lung is everything, and the lung is life.
Yeah, the lung. Got to get the lung.
What is it with this lung, man?
It was some rare form of lung cancer, and they were teaching a class on it. And they needed the lung. So they dump Rick, they get the lung, they go back to Johns Hopkins, and guess what?
What?
It was the wrong lung.
Yeah, they're supposed to get a right lung, got a left lung. And it wasn't even Rick's.
Yeah, it was some lady.
Got the wrong lung from the wrong person. Do you love it? Isn't that an interesting story?
That's about the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life.
I agree.
That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life. They make all this preparation, and they go through all this whole song and a dance to get this lung over to the medical college over there for the students to look at, and I got no idea. Why did they get the lung over this? Why do they have to do it so fast?
Because they was teaching a class that day in that kind of on that lung. Not that lung.
Yeah, but they're teaching a class like on left lung.
They're teaching a class on left lung.
Phil, we're not doctors. We don't know. We're giving you what we heard.
All right.
And anyway, the guy that was teaching it was going on a fishing trip with three other guys. I guess they were going up to the Adirondacks because the season opened on salmon.
Yeah, it was May 15.
The salmon season had opened, so the cat had to leave and go fishing.
Yeah.
And so they had to get that lung over there, man, so he could teach a class on left lung.
When he starts laughing, that means he thinks we're full of crap.
Yeah, I think it's very disrespectful.
Why wouldn't I laugh? They have a class on left lung.
Well, maybe they... I don't know, man.
No, man. No, they don't have any classes on left lung.
Oh, okay, Dr. Hendry. Thank you very much, Mr. General Hospital. Why can't they have a class on left lung?
Why would they have a class... Why not a class on the lungs? So in any event, folks, that was Rick Schaaf, that was his lung, that was the whole thing about smoking. Thank you, Margaret, for filling us in.
Well, I'm touched by your insincerity.
Anyway, we'll be back with Lance Armstrong, and talk about insincerity. This guy, I'm telling you, he is a piece of work. I'm not buying anything from him. And I think it's a study in that thing we talk a lot about on the show, that sociopathic kind of nature. We'll be right back. The world famous Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry.
Welcome back to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, truth is our bitch on this show, and that means essentially, I don't know what that means, really. It's,
well,
it means basically that we're not, this is not a political talk show. We don't really do that. We don't like it. We just try to talk honestly about things, and sometimes we use a little bit of sleight of hand to do it, but nonetheless, I can't tell you what my political point of view is my business. So we just kind of steer clear of that if we can. And it's hard to do because the talk radio, spoken word, whatever they're calling it, has just been polluted by it. I mean, it's to the point now. And I was having a conversation. I told you guys, I had a conversation with some people about 3-4 days ago at lunch. The advertisers are all going over to sports. Did you know that?
The advertisers are going to sports radio.
Yeah.
Why?
Because it's not controversial. Because they're not going to have to field phone calls from 90,000 people bitching about this, that, or something else. So if political talk radio dies, when I mean political talk, I mean conservative talk radio, as well as liberal talk radio, when that actually goes out the door and dies a slow, horrible death, and there's anybody out there that actually likes that kind of stuff, you can blame these activist groups that numbered no more than 5 or 10 people who would call up an advertiser.
Well, why would they respond to 5 or 10 people?
Yeah, that didn't make any sense.
They do because they don't want the hassle. They don't want the hassle. It doesn't matter if it's 5 or 10. They just don't want to hear from them. And they say, the sponsors and the ad agency, I don't want to go near it. Well, it's only 5 people. It doesn't make any difference. I don't want to even hear about it, man. I don't want my product having any tinge of controversy. So they're going over to sports radio because guess what? Sports radio is the only other thing in talk radio that there is, man. All forms of entertainment talk, like what we do, have been bludgeoned almost to death. If you're outside of morning drive, you get, we've just been, we've had our ass handed to us. So,
well, don't start complaining, Phil. It doesn't look good. You don't wear it well,
All right, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Just keep on keeping on,
Yeah, keep it. Keep on keeping on.
Right, that's what he just said.
Yeah, but I'm trying to say, never mind. God.
Well, okay, bud, how would you say it?
Keep on keeping on. Keep on trucking.
What? Now that sounds...
You got to say what you said.
Okay, keep on trucking. That sounds great. Jimmy Hoffa found. Did you hear about this? Well, we're going to get to that in just a moment. And we're going to have on the line with us... a gentleman that knows a little more about that topic, Charlie LaFountain. But let's get on General Galen Shaw. We were talking about the Super Bowl, and we're also going to talk about Lance Armstrong and his sincerity, because I'll tell you, I don't think there's an ounce of sincerity in that guy. And I know that that's a cruel, harsh, tough thing to say, especially when he brings up his kid. I am telling you right now, I don't think Lance Armstrong is sincere. I think Adolf Hitler. I'm kidding.
Oh, my God.
No, I'm just joking, but it's not that bad, is it, General?
Well, no, Phil, I don't think it's quite that bad. No, I don't think that the Lance Armstrong could be categorized. And I know that you're trying to use hyperbole as a way of getting some humor into this, but it is Lance Armstrong, I think, is indicative of, as you said very, very well, and I think it bears repeating, Phil, that Lance Armstrong is indicative of a sociopathic, almost psychopathic nature in sports, that if it is not controlled, if it is not curtailed, could eventually lead to some real problems in sport, because this man basically stared the American people in the eye and lied through his teeth for years. He even filed lawsuits. He even threatened people and pressured people. And I agree with you, Phil, 150%, that Lance Armstrong is not sincere, and this is all about him gaining a face back.
What do you mean 150%, General Shaw? It's Bud Dickman.
What do I mean? What did he say?
What do you? Why are you asking that?
I just want. What do you mean 150%?
150%. In other words, I agree with Phil totally.
That would be 100%, though.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, I don't know. Are these the guys that help you out?
Yes. Bud and Robert, what's the point here?
I want to get... When you in the meeting with Mr. Hall, he said we could ask question two.
Yes.
Okay, we're asking, what is 150%?
Don't worry, Phil. 150%, Bud, I mean, I agree with Phil 100%. When I say I agree with Phil 150%, I agree with him all the way. I agree with him so much that you could say that I agree more with the notion that Lance Armstrong, there's something wrong with him, than even Phil does, you see?
Yeah, but why the figure? That's what we're trying to find out here, General. My name is Robert Leonard, General. That 150%, we want to find out why then.
Why did I say 150%? Because that's just, you know.
It's just a number that they use.
Yes, it's just a number that came to me.
Okay, so there is no real reason.
Well, you guys knock it off. All right, General Galen Shaw with us here as we talk about Lance Armstrong. All right, you said that this portends...
I know that I'm intelligent, but I don't know what portends mean. Does that mean pretend? Or did you just mispronounce it?
No. In other words, does this signify, does this herald?
I know signify. I don't know what herald means.
General, are you all right?
Yes, I'm fine. It's just that Mr. Henry used a couple of words I don't know the meaning of. I'm sorry.
All right. Does this mean that...
Well, are you not using the word because you think that I'm out of my league with big words? Because I know some big words.
No, I just thought I'm trying to move the interview along. It's not that you don't understand anything. I'll just use another word because I want to get to my question.
All right. Well, that's fair enough.
Well, it is. I mean...
Margaret...
What were you going to say, Margaret?
General, please, sir, I just need to move along here.
Got you.
Just stop. Everybody stop. General Shaw?
Yes, Bill. Just because I said I didn't understand portend, I thought it had something to do with pretend. You're telling me no.
No. What I'm asking is, this Lance Armstrong, the state of this man, the man himself, the dishonesty, the lying, and the misrepresentation that went on by Lance Armstrong... Is this, in other words, significant because there's more of this to come from other athletes?
I think, Phil, that what we have, there has been more of this. Lance Armstrong is the tip of the iceberg. The individual that I, when I look at her, and she's not in sports, but when I look at her face, I can tell the way she looks through her face, she's crazier than a crap house rat. You've heard that saying.
Yes. Who is it?
Joan London.
Joan London? She is absolutely adorable.
Well, you can say, yes, she is. But when I look at Joan London, I'm telling you, the way she looks through her face, she's nuttier than a crap house rat.
And Joan London from what was the show?
Good Day America.
Yeah, Good Morning America.
Yes, she was on Good Morning America. She was a huge star.
Of course she was a huge star. She had America eating right out of the palm of her hand. She had... there was the old song, he's got the whole world. You know that?
Yes, he's got the whole world in his hand. Yes, I know that song.
Well, I'm sorry, Margaret. When you just started singing, I got dizzy.
That's not necessary.
All right, General, so Joan London, I want to get back to this. Joan London, in your opinion, is like Lance Armstrong.
I think she has been feeding the American people a bill of goods for the longest time. Every time Joan London's on television... She's got some new scam about her skin. She's got a new dance step, a new hairdo. She's got the same hairdo she had back in the 1970s, as far as I can tell. And nothing. She looks the same. I don't even know. And an argument can be made: is she real? Of course she's real, but she looks exactly the same.
Well, she's I think a little heavier.
All right, so she needs to do some chin-ups. Is that what you're saying?
No, I didn't say chin-ups.
Well, you're saying that she needs to lose some weight.
I don't even think she needs to. I'm just saying I think there's an indication of age. So, but I want to get to this thing.
Well, Bill, you're racing along like my aunt. She used to talk that way. You know, just slow it down. Slow it down. We'll take it one item at a time. Joan London, crazier than a crap house rat. Your opinion.
I don't think that's true. I don't know where you get that from.
You don't think the way she looks through her face.
No.
All right. What about the fact that she's put on about 100 pounds? Well, not 100, but she's heavier.
Okay, she's heavier.
What about her hairdo?
What do you...
Bill, what we're trying to say, General Shaw is saying Joan London is the same kind of sociopath.
Now, were Joan London, if she was Jeffrey Dahmer, she'd be on TV on a Good Morning America talking about everything, and in her trunk would be a head.
Yeah, that's basically it.
I see. So that's what you're saying about Joan London?
Well, I think they're being extreme with their example, but I think that in essence it's true. Joan London has been sitting there for some 30-plus years saying, Good Morning America, and here is my co-host. And you notice how she stayed, but all the co-hosts bit the dust. First, there was that extremely ugly man that I had no idea how he got a job in television, let alone hosting a morning show. I don't know how anyone was able to keep their breakfast down looking at David Hartman morning after morning.
He was extremely popular. He was a good morning host.
Oh, okay, sure.
I don't get... I think he was wonderful.
Of course you think he was wonderful because you bought into all of the advertising mythology. David Hartman was as frightening looking as they get. He was as scary as that kid in Mask. Now, you know that...
Which kid is that?
That Rocky kid?
Yeah, you better believe his name was Rocky. He had a face or a head that looked like it was made out of a malformed boulder. Now, Phil, I don't like...
That's very, very cruel. Very cruel.
I understand. Forgive me. But the point I'm trying to make is that Joan London, this is the next one. Not Lance, you can take Lance Armstrong and you can put him in a wheelchair and wheel him home. I don't care. Joan London is next up. And the way she looks through her face...
Yeah, crazier than a crap house rat.
You got it. You got it, my brother. And so it goes.
But in the world of sports.
Well, I just handed you Joan London on a silver platter, and now you want to go back to cricket or whatever, lawn bowling? You could go to any senior center in America, Phil, if you really want to stick with sports. You could go to any senior center in America and interview all of the old people and then say, where's your car parked? And their imaginary car. They don't really have a car, you know, but their imaginary car is out in the lot someplace. And all right, and when you go out to that imaginary car, there might be an imaginary head. Well, it's not making sense.
No, it's not making sense. It's not making sense at all. I think what you're saying is Joan London's dangerous.
Yes. Yes, I am. Yes, I am. And the same as Lance Armstrong.
To kill somebody?
No, I wouldn't say that. I think he's just dangerous in the sense that he is so full of it. He is so full of crap. His eyes are brown. That is really what I'm talking about there.
Well, we got to be on guard then, you know.
We absolutely do.
And in that sense, goodbye, I'm hanging up on you.
What a dirty...
Oh, so you think the general is a lying, no-good swine?
Not a liar so much as just cuckoo, you know. Talk about imagining things.
You don't think about that imaginary head in an imaginary car.
What are you? Are you serious? Are you serious? General Shaw, let's go to every senior center in America where they're lawn bowling, and where's your imaginary car parked? And I'm going to go out there and fight an imaginary head. See, he thinks now everyone is a psycho. And while there is a, you know, there's a percentage of humans that are all without conscience. And that's what we're talking about with Lance Armstrong. A guy with no conscience. No conscience. That's my opinion. I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. I'm not trying to, you know, I'm just trying to get by. I'm a professional blabbermouth.
Well, there you go, right there. Hey. You hit the nail on the head there, Phil.
Yay!
Knock it off. We'll be back, world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Hold on, don't say anything, okay? Don't say anything.
Well, you were talking about Eddie Money and how bad the commercial for Geico.
Will you just not say anything, please?
I thought truth was our bitch. Oh.
Yeah. No kidding. Way to do it. Give me five.
Yeah, get out of here with a give me five, okay?
No, I want give me five, okay?
Here.
No. Isn't it $5?
No, it's not $5.
Well, then don't give me five. It's just five fingers.
Well, that's what give me five is, five fingers.
Well, I won't take your five fingers laden with oil and, grease. What is that, bud?
Just a little bit of... Well, that's avocado from the guacamole, and that right there is some grease from yesterday.
All right, bud, we don't need to know what's... Margaret, please, okay?
I'm sorry.
Give me five. You thought it was $5.
Well, Ms. Gray, I think that... I mean, I don't want to say anything. I didn't mean to interrupt, Phil.
Go ahead. God, everybody's interrupting. Go ahead.
I think, Ms. Gray, that was a bad thing for you to say.
Well, what was wrong? If he said give me five, I don't know what he meant.
Yeah, but it indicates to the audience that that's the first place you go is, five, give me, like you're taking, like maybe the last time you saw a $5 bill was on an end table.
Oh, so that's it, huh? How'd you like both of your eyeballs poked out right now with, this is a knitting needle.
All right, hey, Margaret, that is really uncalled for.
Well, it was uncalled for.
I wasn't trying to, I'm sorry.
He's saying that it sounded like you're, I don't know, Robert.
Yeah, exactly. A real leap.
But the point being, when they said, give me five, and you automatically thought of $5, and he's saying maybe you're used to seeing that on an end table.
Meaning I'm some kind of, I'm a thing that...
spreads it.
Yes, I'm a lo-fi spread, and I will not be that, and I will not be talked about that way.
What do you mean lo-fi spread?
You know what I mean by...
No, I don't, and I don't want to know what lo-fi spread.
As opposed to hi-fi?
Yeah, okay, wow, whatever.
Well, you know what hi-fi is.
Yeah, it's a reference to, like, the 1950s. Lo-fi spread. Jimmy Hoffa is said to be buried in a vacant lot outside of Detroit. Wow, no kidding? Gee, I haven't heard that before. These guys that come out of the woodwork every so often, Jimmy Hoffa is in the Meadowlands. Jimmy Hoffa is in a support column in a parking garage near a, some kind of a department store someplace, a Nordstrom's in L.A. Jimmy Hoffa is part of the floorboards there at an Italian restaurant, and it just goes on and on. His body has never been found. Since Jimmy Hoffa disappeared in 1975, there have been countless tips about the whereabouts of his body, all of them dead ends. But now new information from the reputed underboss of the Detroit Mafia could lead to a break in the case. Tony Zanelli, or is it Zarilli, who the FBI believes was one of the key figures in the city's mafia, told longtime Detroit reporter Mark Santia, now with WNBC New York, that he believes Hoffa is buried in a vacant lot in the northern part of Oakland County, Michigan, about 30 miles from where Hoffa was last seen at the Red Fox restaurant in suburban Detroit over 37 years ago. This guy, Zarilli is his name.
I never heard of him, and I know the names of all of the main mob bosses. I never heard of him.
Well, gee, Margaret.
Well, Detroit, whoever hears of the Detroit mob anyway?
What about Murder Incorporated?
Murder Incorporated? They weren't from... Was that Detroit?
No, the Purple Gang was Detroit. Murder Incorporated.
Murder Incorporated was a New York thing, I thought. I don't know. Anyway, we're talking way back. Now, the master plan, said Mr. Zarilli, that I understood, was that they were going to put him in a shallow grave here, Zarilli told Santia. Then they were going to take him from here to Rogers City upstate. There was a hunting lodge, and they were going to bury him in a shallow grave, then take him up there for final burial. Then I understood it just fell through. Then I understand it just fell through.
But you got to bury him twice.
Well, I don't know, bud, but from what I understand, having watched Goodfellas and The Godfather and all of those mafias where I get my information, I guess they got to bury the guy just to get rid of him, and then they want to bury him again to get really rid of him. You know, it's like...
Yeah, like a temporary thing.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, because what was the one... I know. They were digging the man up because they were building condominiums.
Yeah, and they threw up.
Yes. I tell you something. How anybody could... I can understand if it's the neighborhood. It's the way it's been. It's the, you know, what you're expected to do, and you just get sucked into it because all your heroes were so-called wise guys. But how if you had a chance to sit back and think about what you're doing.
I don't think they know anything different.
Hoffa, who had headed the powerful International Brotherhood of Teamsters, disappeared in July 75. He was 62. He'd spent nearly 5 years behind bars. At the time of Hoffa's disappearance, Zarilli, who has denied being involved with the mafia, was in jail. Now, 85, Zarilli is releasing a book on March 1st, but Dan Moldea, author of The Hoffa Wars, says Zarilli should still be taken seriously. Zarilli was the underboss of the Detroit Mafia. His father, Joe, was the boss of the Detroit Mafia at the time. Hoffa's disappearance, therefore, anything that happened in Detroit at that time had to be checked by Joe. I wonder if that's true, you know. I wonder if you got a check with the mafia on everything?
Probably.
All right, well, we'll get back to the story because it's interesting. Jimmy Hoffa continues to fascinate. He really does. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show will be back. 877-876-PHIL here on this. Is this Friday? Friday night. Woo! I'm going to San Francisco tomorrow.
Are you driving?
Yes.
Phil Hendry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
And welcome back, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. And we are a news talking, actually mostly a entertainment radio show where truth is our bitch, and we go everywhere that we possibly can to suss it out. And this hour we have Bobby Dooley joining us from the Western States Homeowners Association to talk about a new podcast that she's going to be doing called the Bobby Dooley Podcast. Wanted to finish up also our thoughts on Jimmy Hoffa. Not that we had thoughts. We were just reading the story, and we were agog and aghast. We were sort of just shocked and stunned about a guy being buried, you know, and shot. And what thoughts could I possibly have?
Yeah, that's not my world.
Yeah, not my world either.
Nor is it mine. So all I know is Jimmy Hoffa. All I know about Jimmy Hoffa is what I heard as a kid. Again, this is something from my childhood. You know, it was always about Jimmy Hoffa this, Jimmy Hoffa that. He hated the Kennedys. Okay. He was, the impression, and again, I'm speaking from memory, because when you're a little kid, I'm telling you right now, you really know by talking to a kid what the thrust of the message is, whatever gets through to a kid. What they understand something to be is generally what the message, is generally the message that's heard. And when I was small and somebody said Jimmy Hoffa, I thought, oh, he's a crook.
So you didn't even see the Teamsters side of it?
No, not a chance, man. Where I grew up? I grew up in lily white suburban Los Angeles. So everybody was a Republican, or, you know, they were a Democrat, but they were a real lily white style Democrat. And Jimmy Hoffa, while people, there might have been people that believed in unions. My old man was a typical conservative. He didn't, you know, he thought it was all just a big waste of time and they were stealing this, that, and something else. And Hoffa, he was nothing more than a criminal, exactly. And in later years, as I studied the man's life, I realized that he was a very pugnacious, rambunctious, aggressive advocate for the working people. And yeah, it rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. And he made friends with the wrong people, there's no question.
What do you mean about pugnacious?
Pugnacious. He was ready to fight. You know, he's a very, you know, he's very, I was going to say irascible, but you don't know what that means either, do you?
No.
But get a dictionary and start looking these things up. Don't interrupt the show. What do you mean by pugnacious?
Yeah, if I'd have to know how to spell it, and I don't.
Well, let me ask you a question here.
You're getting sidetracked.
I know, but what am I going to do? Pugnacious. What letter do you think that starts with?
You talk about when I get a dictionary?
Yeah, man, you got to know what, at least you got to know a couple letters of it.
If I had a dictionary here for you, and instead of bugging me and asking me what pugnacious means, couldn't you look it up?
You got, again, I go back to my original point. You got to look it up.
Okay, William F. Buckley. God, how is it you're so articulate when you're arguing with me? All right, so you got to look it up. Pugnacious. What letter do you think that word starts with?
G?
G?
Oh, my sweet, feathery, living, breathing Lord.
G. Pugnacious? That's the one letter that you notice.
I noticed the P. P-U-G.
Yeah, P-U. You got that right.
All right, bud. Do what you want to do. Go through life sounding like a jackball. That's your thing, you know? Guess what? It ain't mine. All right.
Whatever.
Yeah. So anyway, Jimmy Hoffa was that kind of a guy. But a criminal, crook, a two-bit, no-good layabout? I don't know. So getting back to this story of this man, Mr. Zirilli, the underboss of the Detroit Mafia. His father was the head of the Detroit Mafia, and they say, this gentleman says in his new book, The Hoffa Wars, that Jimmy Hoffa was taken to a field up in Rogers City, upstate Michigan, and he was buried in a shallow grave, and then they took him for a final burial. And then I understand, says Mr. Zirilli, it just fell through. What does that mean? They didn't have time?
Well, they might have gotten busy, yeah.
Oh, they got busy. Oh, okay. Well, you know. It must be a very, you know...
Well, Phil, don't be... You know, you're being sarcastic with the mafia, all right? You know what they do, don't you? You know, if they don't like... If you get an attitude with them, you'll wind up... what's the thing, bud, that we saw?
Yeah, you'll be... You'll sleep with a fish.
Sleep with the fishes.
Well, that's not my understanding.
Okay, well, whatever. I can say what I want, and I'm going to say it. The mafia in Detroit... This sounds like a load. That's what I'm saying. Now,
everything sounds like a load to you today.
That's right. Everything does sound like a load to me. Some days I believe things, and some days I look at this stuff and I go, well, this is just this guy must think we're stupid or something. There's one way of finding out. You go find the body. Otherwise, he's just one more guy writing one more book about where they think Jimmy Hoffa was. You want to know something? I don't care, man. At this point, even if you know where he's buried, are you going to find what's left of him unless they put him in a suitcase or something?
Well, to put him in a... Oh, God, I'm going to retch.
God, he'd have to chop it up into little pieces.
I'm going to retch. Excuse me.
Are you really?
I can't...
Hey. Great. You want a tissue?
Oh, well.
Yeah.
I'm better.
You know, Margaret, you're the only woman I know that can make real, masculine, almost beast-like noises when you throw up or cough.
You know what? I'll just go ahead and take that as a compliment.
Sure, okay.
Because if I took it the other way, then these knitting needles come out again. And you know what I said I was going to do to him?
Well, no, you're not going to threaten me with knitting. Put those away, please.
What a pain in the ass.
Put them away, please.
Real killjoy, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm sorry you can't have fun with your knitting needles. All right, so he's 85 now, but he sounds cogent and credible. Yeah, sure, says the author of The Hoffa Wars, Dan Moldea. The question is, how much does he really know, and how credible is what he says? Wait a second. He's 85, but he sounds cogent and credible. The question is, how much does he really know, and how credible is what he says? But he sounds credible. He's been persona non grata in the Detroit underworld for a long time. For a lot of mob guys, they blamed him for some information that leaked out and got some people in trouble. I guess they didn't whack him because of his father. But now the consequence of this guy being alone and broke has made him decide to talk, Moldea said. If he really is telling the truth about this, then I say pay him the money. His book comes out in March, and we'll know by then if he's telling the truth or not, said Dan Moldea, author of The Hoffa Wars, and a book that he probably wants to sell more than this guy. He's broke, he's old, he's selling a... okay, you know.
So you think that's significant?
Yeah, I think it's significant. I do think it's significant. 877-876-7445, Phil Henry Show. I want to bring on the line here Bobby Dooley, and Bobby is going to be talking with us here about her podcast that is coming up very, very soon. And I know, Bobby, that you are not only going to be talking with us about your podcast, but you're going to be telling us, of course, who's going to be guesting on it. And I know that you're in the middle of your Wintertacular there.
We are, Phil. We're in our Wintertacular here at Western Estates. My husband Steve is here. Right now, we're kind of wrapping up with the first night's dance. The Wintertacular goes through this weekend. And
now, are people, is the general public invited?
Unfortunately, no. This is strictly for our residents and for guests. We raise a lot of money for charity. We had our fashion show this afternoon. We had our Junior Miss fashion show this afternoon. We are having our cotillion and our cocktail mixer. And we've got a wonderful DJ up here who's playing. This is my favorite song.
No, I'm going to get my wife out there.
Yeah, this is Return of Mac. Do you know this one, Margaret?
I do. You lied to me.
Yeah, it's great.
So I wanted to talk to you, Bobby, about your new podcast.
Yeah, and I do want to talk about it, Phil, but can I talk a little bit first about the Jimmy Hoffa disappearance?
Sure.
I just had an opinion on that. Steve comes from Wisconsin, which is near Michigan, and Steve had some information when he was a young man, and Steve's a little bit younger than you, Phil, so when Jimmy Hoffa went missing, Steve was a year old. But what did you hear then, Steve?
I was very young at the time, but I heard that Jimmy Hoffa was put in a truck, and then they squished it, or how did they do that, you know?
Give me the phone now. I'll do it.
Wait, one more thing. They squished it in a cube.
I'll snap it in the phone. Come here, give me the phone. Okay, did you hear that, Phil? So when Steve,
I heard it. Now, did I hear correctly?
So when Steve but I'm saying he was very, very young. But the word he got was that they... What did you say about a cube?
Can I jump in?
I'd rather, Margaret, that my husband say it because it was his information. Go ahead.
Yeah, but, again, I was very young.
Jimmy Hoffa went missing in 1975.
That is correct, yes.
When were you born, Steve?
I was born in September of 70, excuse me, September.
There's no such thing as September.
The music is...
Music is very loud.
I'm sorry?
The music is very loud. It's difficult to hear you.
I can't hear what you're saying. Turn the music... Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
I can, Margaret, yes.
I was going to say the music was loud, but it's better now.
Okay.
Bobby, it's Phil.
Yeah.
When was Steve said he was born in September. There's no such month.
When were you born, Steve? For Christ.
Born September.
There's no such thing as September, honey.
September, I'm sorry.
September of 74.
Yes.
Okay. And the word he got when he was a year old?
How old were you when you...
Right after Hoffa went missing that I got the word. That might have been something I read.
Well, where did you get the information that Jimmy Hoffa was cubed?
I heard that he got cubed a few months after.
Steve, Mr. Dooley, this is Phil Hendry.
Yes, sir.
You were only a year old, okay?
Yeah, I said I'm very young. And I know I was young, but, you know, when you're even that age, you're going to hear people talk. And you make a mental note, you know, as you would.
It is true, Phil. If you hear someone say something...
What are you going to make a mental note when you're a year? Or let's say...
Well, Phil, are you calling my husband a liar? Because I'd really hate to think that you're doing that. I'd really hate that.
No, Bobby, no one's doing that.
I think I'm talking to Mr. Henry.
I apologize.
That was very rude, Ms. Dooley.
I'm sorry, but you're being rude to my husband.
No, I'm not being rude to your husband. I'm asking... It's just a basic math question. If Jimmy Hoffa went missing in July of 75, your husband was born in September.
He said September.
There's no such thing as September.
Oh, my God. So you're telling me what months there are? Get a calendar, Steve.
What?
Go get a calendar off the wall. Go into the garage and get one of those. Get the calendar you have hanging on the garage wall that has this.
A little widespread.
How dare you? Phil, we'll get to the bottom of this.
We'll get to the bottom of...
Bobby, it's Margaret. I'm sorry, dear. I didn't mean to upset you.
That's all right.
But there's no such month.
Do you mind if I just check this out? Come, Steve, now.
You lied to me. Yeah, okay, here it is. Here's the calendar.
All right, here, let me look at the calendar. January. Oh, God, look at her. Look at the fat on her ass.
Well, I it guns my end.
You know, my husband has this he's got this calendar. It's called Big Bottoms. What do you think of that, Phil?
Ms. Dooley, I'm not ready to comment on that. I want to get to the essence of your appearance on the show, which is your podcast, and you wanted to talk a little bit about Hoffa. Now we're getting sidetracked as to the names of months, okay?
All right, fine. I'm sorry. Sorry. Excuse me for breathing. Let me just look this up.
I'm not attacking you for anything. I'm just saying, can we...
I understand. September, system. Wait. Wait a minute. What comes before that?
You got to start in January.
Oh, okay.
Oh, my God. We got to take a break, okay?
Well, excuse me.
Yeah, just, we got to take a break. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth that is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
February, March.
Yeah, that one there is March.
This is the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. On the line with me, Bobby and Steve Dooley, in the middle of... and I do appreciate very much, Ms. Dooley, you celebrating... This evening, you're celebrating your Wintertacular, your first night of... how many nights is it?
Phil, our Wintertacular goes three nights. It goes through Sunday night. That's when every one of our seasonal taculars, the Springtacular, the Summertacular, and, of course, our Falltacular that we had back in August... all of these...
Can I ask you something?
Yeah.
You had your Falltacular in August?
We did, Phil. We moved it up because we just wanted to have the... You know, the kids wanted to swim.
Okay, but what about your Summertacular?
Phil, don't... She knows what she's doing.
I think I know what I'm doing, Mr. Henry.
All right, I'm fine. So, let's get back to... you really like that song, don't you?
Yeah, I had the DJ. We've got DJ Deacon...
Yeah, DJ Deacon D and David Dull. David Dull was last year, and they needed some help, so DJ Deacon Dee Dee. And DJ Deacon Dee Dee is his sister, DJ Deacon D, and David Dull last year...
Was Dull. Believe it or not, his name's David Dull, which is a bad name to give yourself if you're not good, you know?
So his... What do you mean he wasn't good?
The music sucked.
Yeah, but we said, you know what, David, we'll have you back this year. And he said... No problem, Ms. Dooley. I've got my bro or something. And he said, have you heard of DJ Deacon D and Dee Dee? And I said, I've heard of I said, no, I haven't. I was going to make a joke about, you know, the D word.
But I thought you were coming on to it.
Exactly. So I said, no, I haven't. And he said, well, I'm going to bring DJ Deacon D and the sister Dee Dee. And I, you know, so...
And so they're playing just the Return of the Mac over and over again.
Well, Phil, you know, he's got more talent than that. I asked him to play it again.
Okay. I'm just joking. All right, so, Ms. Dooley, let's talk here now about the podcast, can we?
Well, yes, we can, but I just wanted to say one more thing about Jimmy Hoffa. Steve, my husband, is from Wisconsin.
Right, but your husband... All right.
Can I finish?
Go ahead.
He heard in, and I'll just say what Steve told me, okay?
Why can't I do it?
I'm doing it. I'll tell you what my husband Steve told me just moments ago. Steve told me...
Why don't you have Steve say it?
Because Steve told me, so now I'm telling you. Why is everyone trying to...
Darling, no one is trying to... Go ahead. This is Margaret. You go right ahead, dear.
Thank you. DJ Deacon D and his sister Dee Dee, along with Dave Dull, came to the house early to set up. And Steve, I overheard him saying, I know what happened to Jimmy Hoffa. I heard about it in 1975, right after Hoffa went missing. And DJ Deacon Dee Dee said, the sister said, what happened? And he said that Jimmy Hoffa was buried in a cement slab that was going to go under a barbecue that some mafia boss was having installed. In other words, it was a barbecue in his backyard, and they needed a cement slab. And as a joke, they put Jimmy Hoffa in there, and this guy didn't know about it.
Why is that a joke?
Well, when he said we need a slab, and I think someone remarked, what was it, Steve?
Yeah, wait, I got a slab. And they go, yes, good or not?
Yeah, they said, we need a slab. Well, we got a slab. And they said... You know, let's go for it. The price is right. And they said, oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I heard when I thought, Robbie, well, you're right about it, but, you know, but bebop, 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 do.
Are you doing that shorthand again?
Yeah.
Just slow down.
It was what I heard when I was less than a year old.
All right. Now, I'm not going to belabor the point. You said that Steve heard that. That's fine.
Well, but you're basically saying that I'm full of you-know-what.
I don't know. I'm not saying that at all. I am saying that your husband's stretching the truth a little bit.
Mr. Henry, I can tell you this about my husband, Steve. He's able to stretch some things, but that ain't one of them, if you know what I mean. My husband can really stretch it. Don't worry about it. But that...
Oh, God.
All right. Ms. Dooley, about your podcast...
Yeah, go ahead.
Let's talk about that. When is it debuting?
The podcast, Phil, is going to be called the Bobby Dooley Podcast. It will be debuting in February, and we've got a really great first round of interviews that we're going to be doing.
And you will be doing who?
Well, we've already got the wonderful Patty Arquette in the can. She is she's just delightful, and we had a marvelous talk. I think we're on the same wavelength. I think Patty really, you know, respects me. I think she knows that I've, you know, she's a very smart lady, but, you know, you're not going to, you know.
You're not running circles about my way.
Yeah, you're not going to run any circles around me. So I think Patty walked out of there pretty much going, wow, you know, this was, woo, you know, she really.
So she was very impressed with how you were able to stay with her?
Oh, yeah. In fact, I think I went past her.
Yeah, I think you kind of, you know, you stayed with her and then you lapped her.
What is that supposed to mean? I lapped her?
No, lap as a track. I don't mean lap.
Well, I don't believe. What does he mean by that?
Darling,
Hold on. We got to take a break. He didn't mean. He meant lap as in when you lap somebody in track, you go around them.
Well, that.
All right, hold on. The Phil Henry Show will be right back. Why is everybody with a filthy mind?
Well, I'm talking about laughing.
No.
Well, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Will you knock it off, Margaret?
I should be putting one of these to the things I'm fit to.
Phil Henry.
Blah, blah, blah.
Welcome back here on the Phil Henry Show. Bobby and Steve Dooley with us here. Margaret Gray, Robert Leonard, Bud Dickman with us as we talk with the Dooleys from their Wintertacular there at the Western Estates Homeowners Association. The Wintertacular is a charity event that they're. I can hear the song.
We like the song a lot, and we did hire DJ Deacon Dee Dee, and DJ Deacon Dee Dee, and DJ D.
DJ Deacon Dee,
and Dave Dull.
Dave Dull. This cat's got an interesting name, doesn't he?
Well, you got to have a show busy name, Phil.
Yeah, but that's not exactly the kind of name that's going to inspire me any confidence in somebody hiring a DJ, is it?
No, they don't.
Yeah, because the hip-hop artists today, Phil, if you're familiar with hip-hop...
I listen to a little bit of it.
Oh, you listen to it? Oh, get him.
Seriously, Mr. Henry?
I listen to a little hip-hop, yeah.
Well, is this a second childhood thing, or
no, ma'am, no. It's you know what it is. It's me trying to stay current, and it's me trying to stay current with the culture. And about as current as you can get, in my opinion, is listening to hip hop. I don't know if.
What about what's the lady Taylor Swift?
What about her, man?
Don't you think that's current?
I think it's all current, yes. But I can only stay in touch with so much, so I listen to hip hop. In any event, let's move past that. So I forget where we left off, but I want to ask about the podcast.
Yes, the podcast, Phil, is going to be debuting in February. We have Patty Arquette, who I said, now I got to start all over again.
No, you don't have to start all over again. You talk circles around her.
Oh, that's right, Steve. You know, I really would like my husband to explain that.
No, he doesn't.
Excuse me, Mr. Henry, but he's my husband, not yours.
Of course.
Excuse me, he's my husband, not yours.
We know...
He's my husband and not yours, Margaret.
Go ahead.
Steve?
When I said lap, honey, I didn't mean lap. You're going to lap, you know, lap a lady. You didn't lap her. I meant in track, when you start on the track, okay?
Yes, I'm listening.
When you start running and you go so fast, I'm scared.
It's all right. If you answer correctly, there's nothing to be afraid of.
Ms. Dooley, we're taking...
He's my husband, not yours.
I know he's your husband. We're taking up valuable time on my show.
Just let him... I want... This is a very important thing for him to explain. If he's trying to say to me and your audience that I had some kind of a lap session with Patty Arte...
Nobody's saying that. Lapping is in when you start out racing on a track and you pass the person in the circle, you've lapped them.
So it's a track term.
Track and field, yeah.
Well, you could have said that.
Bobby, we've been trying to say it.
All right. So, where was I?
All right, Patty Arquette.
Patty Arquette. Then we are going to have Sugar Leonard, or, I'm sorry.
Sugar Ray.
Sugar Ray Leonard.
Sugar Ray Leonard, okay, great.
Yeah. And then we're going to have the great George Lopez, okay? And then we're going to have the great Joel McHale. So that's how we're rolling it out. Those will be the first four, and we're very excited, Phil.
Now, how long will the podcast be?
It'll be anywhere from 20 to 30 minutes. Is that what we thought, Steve?
Yeah, 20 to 30 minutes, depending on, you know, everything about it. But we, Bobby interviewed Patty Arquette for like an hour.
Well, I'm looking forward to it, Bobby. I really am. In fact, I don't think I've looked forward to a podcast more than listening to you talk to some of these celebrities. Do you get starstruck?
Well... No, I don't get starstruck because I do, but then I remember that I'm the president of the Western States Homeowners Association, and it
doesn't get much better than that, does it?
No, it doesn't. And so when you sit down with a big star like George Lopez, and you go, yeah, he's big, but guess what?
Yeah, but Western States.
Exactly. So you sort of...
You get some perspective. I'm looking forward to it, and I do want to interview you, darling, for... My column.
I'd love to do it, Margaret.
Great.
I'd really love to do it because we do want to get as much press as we can.
All right, Bobby, congratulations. We are all, my audience included, my subscribers on PhilHenryShow.com, we're all looking forward to,
Well, no, it goes like, the Bobby Dooley podcast.
Yeah, you got to do it right.
Yeah, do you remember the Chuck Berry documentary where he... He basically excoriated or exfoliated, I forget which, Keith Richards.
Well, he didn't exfoliate Keith Richards.
That means he gave him a spa treatment.
Oh, okay, no. Well, he excruciated or something.
He excoriated.
Yes. And he said to Keith Richards, "You play guitar like a man with no hands."
No, he didn't. He simply took exception to Keith Richards not hitting that one note.
That's it, yes. Well, because that note is really important to Chuck Berry. It was the song, I forget the song. But anyway, when you don't go properly, you are disrespecting my podcast.
All right, I'm sorry. It's
That's better, yeah.
The Bobby Dooley podcast, debuting in February. And it'll be on the Sideshow Network.
Which is the same one that your podcast is on, Phil.
Great. And we're looking forward to it very, very much so. Congratulations on the success of your Winter Tacular, Bobby.
And, Bobby, I'm going to be out tomorrow night. Thank you for the invite for Frank and I.
You're very welcome, Margaret.
And good night to you and to your husband, Steve. Thank you, Steve.
You're welcome, Freddie. Let's say hello to everybody out there. And my son, I want to say hello to our son, Seth, Justin, and Dylan.
I thought they were home with you.
Well, they are. They're right here, but... I don't know.
Yeah, boys, did you hear say? Okay, so they didn't care anyway.
All right, well, anyway, thank you very much, Steve.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Okay, bye.
Goodbye, Phil.
Hang up.
Goodbye. Hang up on them.
But they're not done.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Will you hang up on them, please?
They weren't done saying goodbye.
They weren't going to be done saying goodbye until you... That's Bobby and Steve. And I want to say something, Margaret. You were very gracious to her.
Yeah, I know Sam is great. You're very nice to her.
Of course I'm nice to her. She's entering into a new phase of her life. You know, the boys are getting older. And I know what that's like. And although my son's younger, but she's entering into a new phase of her life. And I think this is good for her.
Well, I just think that it's really cool of you not to get angry. That she's sort of doing something that, you know, don't you wish you had a podcast?
No, I have to tell you, Phil, my life is full and rich with my column. I have Frank, I've got my son, I've got the radio show here. And to be perfectly honest with you, Is there anyone listening?
Yeah, there's a radio audience.
Well, besides that, is there anyone...
You want to go check?
Go check around the office, bud. Make sure there's no one hanging around.
We got the whole radio audience listening.
Just do me this favor.
No, I don't see nobody around here.
All right. I think it's going to stink. I think she's going to stiff it up.
Oh, so you don't wish her well?
No, I do wish her well, but I'm not nervous about her doing well because I think it's going to stink. The stink coming off of this, well, she'll stink it out.
Keyword being stink.
Well, Phil, it's a showbiz term. All right, she's going to lay a big egg.
You think she's going to go out and lay an egg out there, huh?
Absolutely.
Well, that's a heck of a thing. And here I thought you were being gracious, you know.
Phil, I do wish her well. But what do you want me to do? Do you want me to sit there and say, oh, and by the way, Bobby, I think you're going to lay the biggest egg in the world with this podcast. I'm not going to do it.
Why do you think she's going to lay an egg? I mean, I think if nothing else.
Are you kidding?
No, I'm not kidding. I mean, if nothing else, it's Bobby, the inimitable Bobby interviewing, you know, Patty Arquette. I mean, it's going to be funny, I think. It's going to be a scream.
Well, I hope there's some sort of some kind of benefit from it, because I think it's going to stink the joint out.
Well, I mean, literally?
Not literally, bud. The stink the joint out is a showbiz term meaning you're bombing, okay?
There, you're bombing.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
We'll be right back. Is it time to just, like, is it time to go home? You know, I've worked my ass off tonight, and we haven't. I feel like a man who's run 100 miles, and I've gotten 5 feet, you know?
That you have 5 feet, or
you've gotten 5 feet?
Are you listening to me?
Yeah.
Are you listening to me? I said I feel like a guy that's run about, that's gotten, well, I guess you're right.
Yes, because the way you said that.
I feel like a guy that's run 100 miles, but it feels like I've only gone 5 feet. That's what I should have said.
Yeah, it said gotten.
All right, I apologize, guys. David Letterman shakeup in the Late Show head writer's department. What's going on with David Letterman? And obviously, you know, it's an interesting show, and we're fans of David Letterman, and then things are going to happen in the Hollywood world. So let's see what's going on with the David Letterman show. We got some other showbiz news coming up for you. Also, this very, very frightening story of two jets colliding on the ground in Miami, two passenger jets. When it said jets collide in Miami, I thought it was...
Yeah, the Dolphins or something.
And then I realized the season's over and neither one of those teams are in the playoffs. We'll be right back. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Coming up, we're going to, there he is. There's Phil on Phil TV and HD. Coming up, we're going to talk about a malware network called Red October that they have, have you heard of this? They think it is Chinese malware. That, and malware is basically, it's another word for a virus. Only malware is not just a virus, but it is, for instance, a bit of software introduced surreptitiously presenting itself as software that your computer might need. Maybe it's in a Java program for all I know. And then you find out once it's in the computer that it's doing its dirty work. And this particular malware network called Red October has targeted over the years governments in Eastern Europe. They believe that they are Russians that run it. They're using Chinese malware and they're attacking like the government of Russia and Eastern Europe and so on. In any event, they were able to disable it. How'd you like that? They were able to disable it.
Well, that's it's not quite alliteration.
All right. I've just learned that I'm just going to read this as if it's me. No, it's actually Nikki Fink writing for Yahoo TV. Quote, I've just learned that one of the longtime writers and producers of the Late Show with David Letterman, Matt Roberts, is becoming the new head writer effectively immediately. effective immediately. The previous head writers, Justin and Eric Stangle, will remain as writers and producers with the show, but also get a fat new multi-year development deal with Worldwide Pants, the production company run by Letterman and Rob Burnett. The Stangle brothers are going to remain with the show as part of the deal because we need them, Rob Burnett just said to this writer, Nikki Fink. These guys are as good as it gets. The twosome have had an unusually long and successful 14-year run as Letterman's head writers, and now will turn a lot of their attention to coming up with TV shows in any format for Worldwide Pants. For people like this, super valuable to the show. This deal keeps these guys from walking, Burnett said. He especially wanted to ensure the pair were signed to a deal in order not to repeat what happened when Letterman writers Carter Bays and Craig Thomas, who walked out the door of Worldwide Pants and created the long-running and profitable franchise How I Met Your Mother. The Stangle brothers are hilarious, says Nikki Fink. Remember their online antics with Bill Sheff during the writer's strike and look forward to their scripted and unscripted pitches, whatever they want to do, Burnett told me. So these are two writers that I guess are good. I thought that somebody got fired or something.
Maybe.
Well, meanwhile, Roberts will fly solo as the head writer after working his way up from an intern to the talent department as a guest wrangler, then a segment producer. Wow. Burnett said that he's a great writer. This is just, I thought someone got canned, you know.
Well, what? So it's not interesting?
No, it's not.
That's dumb. Listen, that's sadistic. Yeah, you're being like Lance Armstrong.
Oh, get out of here. No, congratulations, guy. You've got a fantastic thing happen to you there. See, so the economy may be bad, but there's a couple of guys there writing for David Letterman that just got new TV deals, so they're rock and roll. Jets collide in Miami on the ground with no injuries. Authorities say no one was injured when two commercial jets collided near the gates at Miami International Airport. Airport spokesman Mark Henderson told the Miami Herald on Thursday night that one plane had a damaged wingtip, the other sustained damage on the tail section. The collision happened between concourses J and H as an incoming Aerolíneas. It's an Argentina airline Airbus with 240 passengers aboard, struck an Air France 777-300 plane preparing to leave for Paris with 350 passengers on board. God, what a couple of, you know.
Those are two very big airplanes.
Two big airplanes, and like, and we're landing and you're taking off and bang, they hit each other. Talk about nerve-wracking, you know, because there's people that they don't like flying in the first place. You imagine not liking flying and then actually being in an accident? Why doesn't that drive somebody just stark raving mad?
Because they're dead.
Hello?
Oh.
What do you think going to happen, man? Maybe they go stark raving mad before it hits the ground.
Well, what about this? This didn't... See, what I'm saying is, you know, any kind of an accident.
Well, I think...
Are you talking about if you were afraid of flying?
If you're afraid of flying, if you don't like flying, if you hate flying, it's nerve-wracking, it's this, that. And, you got to fly because you're going to go someplace, you have to fly. And you get involved, and an actual accident happens, is what I'm saying. I bet you that just, what does that do to you? I mean, that's it, I'm never flying again.
Didn't you say you sat with a guy that never flew?
I did. I was on a train with a guy. This guy was he never flew again. He had been in a small plane accident, so he took trains everywhere. Anyway, Veronica Ramuto, a teacher, told the Miami Herald that she was walking to her seat 49F when she felt like an earthquake was happening. With one hand, she held her bag, and with the other, she held onto a chair, and with the other, she...
That means she got three hands.
Yeah, I'm just kidding.
Oh, God. I thought for a moment she was...
Yeah, three hands.
That's, I did.
You did, huh? Well, there's no such thing.
Phil, don't start rolling your eye. Oh, boy, did I really put it over on them. When you say she grabbed this with one hand, she grabbed something else, because naturally you want to know what she's grabbing, and so the mind goes to filth, and you don't keep track of the number of hands. It's like being a woman in a lot of ways.
Why is it like being a woman?
Because you can't keep track of the number of hands.
Oh, you mean grabbing at you?
Exactly. You know, every time I say something like that, Phil, you look at me like I'm a lying sack of dung.
Well, I'm not thinking you're lying, but is this the time and place to be bringing up how many hands are grabbing at you?
Yes, because most of the time it's happening here. I'm only kidding.
Thank you. Anyway, she thought it was an earthquake. The boom, the ding. Investigations underway. Such fender benders are relatively rare. In April 2011, the Christian Science Monitor reported the world's largest passenger jet, the Airbus 380, clipped a smaller jet in New York. No one was injured on Monday night when the massive Air France 380 clipped the tail of a smaller Delta jet at John F. Kennedy Airport, said the Christian Science Monitor. Air France 380 also brushed the wing of an Airbus 330 that was parked at Charles de Gaulle Airport in Paris in 2011. All right, so this stuff happens. And then we have Monty Tao. He denies involvement in the online girlfriend hoax. We have going on here, folks. I hope you're noticing this. I hope you're paying attention to this. This is not a you don't. If you believe that we've got a problem with honesty, you're not getting the whole story. You're not getting the whole story. Now, I think this guy Monty Tao, I think this guy has a personality problem. I think he's got a little bit of a mental problem. Not mental as in mentally deficient. I think he has an emotional problem. I don't know why I feel that way, but it sounds like the kind of badly constructed story that the end result of which may give him some kind of profit or some reward, but you'd think he'd put together a better story. Lance Armstrong, on the other hand, this is a guy that just has absolutely no conscience about anything, and now he's out to save his own ass because he saw this thing going to hell in a handcart.
You don't think he said that? He said it's because of his kids.
Of course he said it was because of his kids. This guy is the most self-serving slob in the history of man on this planet. Lance Armstrong is going to say it's about his kids because he wants things to reflect well on him. He lied through his teeth. He targeted people for lawsuits. He targeted people for abuse and pressure. And now when he sees that the whole thing is coming apart, he's got to get ahead of the game. And he goes on Oprah and he does this pitch. And frankly, from what I've heard and from the people that I've talked to, it came off as dull as hell. It did, and I'll tell you why it's dull, because it's not sincere. And you got to go some, man, to ask the right questions of a guy like that. This guy, this Monty Tao, sounds to me like he's a guy that concocted this horse dung just to get a little bit of love, you know?
Why don't you think he lied about it? Like, he's trying to get a psychopathic and everything like that.
Because it doesn't strike me that way, man. You know?
What about the fact that he wants the Heisman Trophy?
Yeah, I can understand where you try to get a bio going or a backstory on yourself going about the Heisman Trophy, but this is just very clumsy and reflects more a guy who wants to get some kind of a reputation as a romantic guy. All right, we'll be back. World famous Phil Henry Show. Final hour here of this Friday night, now Saturday morning here on the West Coast, world famous Phil Henry Show, and we thank the Dooleys. Don't forget, next month debuts the Bobby Dooley podcast. Speaking of podcasts, you can hear the daily Phil Henry podcast, and this is drawn from the archives of our enormous, our big, our huge, our gargantuan-sized archive.
That's childish, Phil.
Don't give me the whole, just let me do my thing here, okay?
Well, the big, you might as well say the big
throbbing.
I didn't say that.
Well, you know what, Margaret? You're making it even worse by pointing it out, then.
Pointing out what? Throbbing?
Yeah, as a matter of fact.
Well, you could say you have a throbbing archive.
Really? Okay. And our big throbbing archive. Does that make you feel better? Because you were the one that was saying that.
Never mind. You're blowing it. You're missing the point. As Robert De Niro said in Copland, you blew it, you blew it.
Yeah, uh-huh. All right, so anyway, our podcast is available daily.
What's wrong?
I got an itch on my back. She's bugging me. You guys bug me. The whole thing's bugging me. All right, anyway, We have our podcast daily. If you go to the podcast banner on the homepage of our website, philhenryshow.com, click on that and you find a podcast. And we will also have a banner there so you can find the Bobby Dooley podcast, Once and Whence. That baby is rock and roll, and that should be, as we mentioned, in a couple of weeks. All right. Anyway, welcome to the show. Great to be with you. Great to have you there where you are. Great for us to be here where we are, and just you stay where you are. We'll stay where we are, and I think then we know where everybody is, right? Because, you know.
It's tough to keep track of everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very difficult to keep track of people, so I know you guys are there. I'm here. Our subscribers watching on Phil TV, they're there. Whoever is out there is out there. I want to give a little special shout-out to a lady. Now, this may scare her or it may delight her. I don't know. But we have a wonderful little listener that I talk to on Twitter a lot. Her name is Gigi. She's 15. And I got to tell you something. When you have fans that young, it's fantastic. But it also kind of worries me because the material we do here sometimes...
Well, I would say, is her name Gigi?
Yeah.
First of all, darling, this is Margaret, and Gigi, that's a lovely name.
I don't know if that's a real name, I guess, you know.
Well, it's a lovely name, and it reminds me of the Maurice Chevalier. Did you see Gigi, Phil? Did you see it?
No, I did not.
Well, it's Maurice Chevalier, and he does the song 2-3, and Bill Bergantine was my accompanist for years, and Bill died as the result of he had the accident.
You said he had a chandelier fall on him?
Well, it was the Cirque du Soleil, and it wasn't with Cirque du Soleil. He was fooling around on their stage, and he thought it was a fake prop, and it fell on him, and it wasn't. He thought it was a foam rubber chandelier. So he pulled the switch and said, "Watch this," and that's the last anyone ever heard from him. And
good God, that's a gruesome way to die.
It's very sad. Because he thought that the chandelier was made of foam rubber.
And he goes, "Watch this?"
Yeah, he said, "Watch this." He pushed the button, and this thing came crashing down on him, and he barely got out the word "this." He said, "Watch," and he hit the button, "this," bang.
And he's dead.
Well, I hope so. I mean, I didn't stick around, but he eventually was dead, yes.
Oh, were you there?
Oh, yeah, I was in the audience. It was a rehearsal, and he was fooling around. I said, "You know, Bill, darling, that belongs to the Cirque du Soleil people." And he said something along the lines, "Oh, they think they're so great. It's really very easy. Watch, click, this, smash."
And you got up and left.
Oh, I fled the theater, yeah.
Your accompanist, your friend.
He's my accompanist. There he was. And he's a great one. I wouldn't say he's my friend. If he was my friend, I would have gone up there and pulled the chandelier off of him.
Well, Margaret, I mean, you don't have to be a friend of someone.
Yeah, I mean, you didn't go up and help?
There were people up there. I was shocked. And I was late for I had a dentist appointment. Now, I know it...
A dentist appointment?
Hold on, Phil. Before you get into your indignation, which I think is so stale...
Margaret, I'm not being indignant in a phony way. I mean, It shocks me.
Will you let me finish?
Yes.
First of all, I had an interview that evening with Tom Hanks.
Okay.
I had been suffering, and I know there's a lot of people listening who know this, I had a bit of halitosis as the result of some gum rot. See right here? See? Right there?
Okay, Mark. Yeah, I got it, okay?
Oh, grow up. So you can see that?
Yes.
No, but you see the rot, right?
I see it already.
Anyway, I had breath that was... Frank said it was fetid. I said it was bad. So you take your pick.
Okay, I guess it was... That's not good.
No, it's not good. The chandelier hits Bill Bergantine. The last thing I hear is, yeah, and I said, "It's now or never, Margaret. Either you get up there and get the chandelier off of him, or you flee the theater and get to this dental appointment," because I cupped my hand in front of my mouth and went, you know, as we all do.
You did a quick breath check.
Yes, I went, "Huh," took a whiff, looked at Bill's legs sticking out from underneath the chandelier, and I said, "My God, I've got no choice."
And you went to your dental appointment.
Yeah, but you with your judgment, and you went, "Yeah,
but Miss Gray, the man was..."
He was there were 15 people getting... I had breath that smelled like rotten eggs. What would you have done?
What would I have done?
Yes, and don't lie.
You want me to tell the truth?
Well, now I know what you're going to say. I would have gone up and I would have helped the man.
Yes, that's exactly what I would have done. And if I saw that there were a lot of people there that were helping him, I would have been shocked. I would not have been able to leave the theater to go to my dental appointment.
Even though you've got breath that would knock a buzzard off of a garbage scow.
Yes. Margaret, I don't know how long you let the halitosis go, but I got to tell you, you know.
Oh, okay. Tell me all about it, Mr. Crest. Mr., you know, 3 out of 5 ADA dentists recommend Crest. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, I just take care of your teeth, for God's sake, so that it isn't such a crisis that a man is dying in front of you. And
he was dead. The thing came down. Crash, kaboom.
Oh.
I don't like these conversations because it makes me look like the back end of a horse. You see, when in point of fact, it should be you.
Well, I'm so sorry it doesn't go according to script, but you're the one that's saying I had halitosis and I had to get to the dentist and...
Well, you repeating it doesn't make me look any better.
Yeah, but see, it's great. You talk about your breath and knock a buzzard off a garbage scow. And
could you say it a little bit louder so the whole world hears it?
We're on the radio right now.
I'm going to say, if they see that your breath...
But just...
The breath smells like a garbage scow, okay?
What?
Your breath smells like garbage.
But nobody can hear you. Now it's ridiculous, all right?
Breath smell like the garbage.
My breath smelled like someone hadn't taken the garbage out. Yes, what of it? What?
The fact that you just readily admit that, I just, you know, that's... Well, it's why we love you, Margaret.
I'm honest.
You are. You are. It's why we love you. Can I...
Go ahead. You and your radio show.
Oh, well, I'm sorry my radio show is interrupting you telling us all about your treatment for halitosis and Bill Bergantine and the chandelier and the Cirque du Soleil and you fleeing the theater doing a breath check.
Well, at least you were listening.
Right. Ronaya, R-O-N-A-I-A-H, Ronaya Tuiasosopo. Sounds like a mouthful. It's a Polynesian name. And for a moment, I had confused this man, Tuiasosopo, with another Tuiasosopo surname that had played for the San Francisco 49ers. But this man is a friend of Monte Teo. These are all Pacific Islander people. And the man who has been publicly identified as being behind the Monte Teo girlfriend hoax, this Mr. Tuiasosopo, called a church friend in early December crying and, quote, admitted to duping the Heisman finalist, the friend told Outside the Lines on Thursday. The friend, a woman in her mid-20s, agreed to be interviewed under the condition that she not be identified, saying she was fearful for her family's safety because of the overwhelming publicity the story has generated. In the interview, she did allow for her voice to be recorded. She said Tuiasosopo gave her the tearful confession and account of how he played what he said was a first, a game on the unsuspecting Teo, and she said he told her that it wasn't the first time he'd done it. What? He told me that Monty was not involved at all. He was a victim. The girlfriend was a lie. The accident was a lie. The leukemia was a lie. He was crying. He was literally crying. He's like, I know what I have to do. It's not only Monty, but he was telling me that it's a lot of other people that they had done this to. Notre Dame issued a news release Wednesday. The Deadspin.com reported it could find no record of Lene Kakua, Teo's supposed girlfriend, existing. Notre Dame athletic director Jack Swarbrick said in a news conference on Wednesday night that coaches were informed by Teo and his parents on December 26th that Teo had been the victim of what appeared to be a hoax. Someone using a fictitious name apparently ingratiated herself with Teo, the school said, then conspired with others to lead him to believe she died of leukemia. Swarbrick said that the relationship took place online and over the phone. But Teo had described staying on the phone with whom he thought was Kakua for hours each night over many months. Tuiasosopo's friend from church told ESPN that Tuiasosopo admitted to having his female cousin speak to Teo over the phone. Teo told Notre Dame officials that he received a phone call December the 6th while in attendance at an ESPN awards show in Orlando, Florida, from a member
from a number he recognized as having been that he associated with Kukua. So there's that December 6th. And on December the 6th, the woman on the line during the phone call told Teo she had to fake her own death in order to elude drug dealers. The woman then tried to restart her relationship with Teo. Oh, come on, man. Are you asking me to believe this horse dung? This is a load, okay, that this guy, Manti Teo, is involved in. He's into it up to his freaking neck. This Tuiasa Sopo guy, has anybody met this guy yet? Supposedly, this was a phone call from the girlfriend to somebody saying, oh, I talked to him, and she didn't want her voice, her real name used. She didn't mind it being recorded, but she's in fear for her own safety. I'm telling you, this is a series of elaborate lies so this Manti Teo can get off the hook for making up this large lie. And why? Who knows? People may say it's because he wanted to ingratiate himself with Heisman voters. I say it's because he's got a personality defect. That may have something to do with it, but the personality defect creating these stories, I bet you if you go back in this guy's life, you'll find a lot of other big stories he created. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show with more of this baloney.
Truth is Second. Our bitch. The Phil
deli
Hendry
today,
Show.
Man. Yeah, this is a deli, man. We're serving up the bologna. Right. Thick sliced.
This is the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL. On the line with us is former professional football coach Jersey Jenkins from Milwaukee. Coached the Milwaukee Lions briefly during this past season, and he joins us on our newsmaker line from Milwaukee. Jersey, you know, you've been around football players, and you've been around young men as well as mature ball players, you, college guys, high school guys. To me, this sounds like a young guy who's in the glare of the spotlight, who wants to get a little bit of extra love from the media and comes up with a big bullcrap story.
Well, I'll tell you something, Phil. I hate to disagree with you, but I got to tell you that this guy is, in my opinion, from all accounts and all the reports that I've heard and from the intelligence that I've gathered, and also just the people that I know at Notre Dame and the places that young man, Mr. Teo, has played, that he is a young man of astounding character and good judgment and good taste, and has been, has been feated in all of the football, any of the areas of football, the chapels, the churches, the halls of football where one can be celebrated. Manti Teo is right up there. I think it's premature to say that he is not telling the truth or prevaricating, or however you want to put it. I think it's wrong to say that, every bit as much as it may be wrong to say that, the whole thing is true. Because we know from what we heard in the news today that this young lady who called the news media or contacted the news media, she's saying she talked to this guy, Tuiasa Sopo. You know what? I'm going to give Manti Teo the benefit of the doubt on this one and play it out.
Well, okay, but come on, Coach. You want to give him the benefit of the doubt. I understand you have to say that because you're a football coach.
No. Let me tell you something, Phil. Nobody, I just got to tell you, no one blows any smoke up my dress. I've been in this game for a long time. I've been around the media a long time. I've been around football players a long time, and I know that they are all, at the end of the day, they're all looking to promote themselves, and they've got a book to sell, or they've got a video game to sell, or they just have a career to sell. But no one's going to blow smoke up my dress, and as the saying goes, pee down, well, I shouldn't say, but pee down my back and tell me it's raining when I know that it's a bright, sunny day, and it's just someone standing behind me on a rooftop or something with a fly down, and, you know what I'm saying? I mean, we're just...
Yeah, no, I understand, but again... You're saying that you're not a gullible guy.
I am not a gullible guy.
Okay. And I don't think you are either, Coach, but come on. Just hear me out here.
All right, go ahead. Make your case. You state your case. I'll state my case. And I think that's the best way to do it.
Okay, my case is this. Here's a guy by the name of Tuia Sisopo. His name is being bandied about in the press. He's been mentioned in many different stories. He is now mentioned as the guy who perpetrated the hoax, and yet no one has met him yet. No one's talked to him.
Well, you mean no one from the media's met him?
Well, that's what I mean, yeah.
I mean, I'm sure that there are people out there that have met him. You know, if he goes to get gas, I'm sure there's a guy at the gas station. I'm sure that...
No, I'm talking about significant individuals in this story.
All right, but that's not to say he doesn't exist.
That may well be, but the importance of this story is that all the principals must come forward now, and let's talk about this, because here's what's at stake. Notre Dame's athletic director has gone out on a limb to talk about the character of this young man. The university is backing him. He's a guy who was up for the Heisman, and it may have been an attempt to defraud or otherwise, a con the media of this country into giving him a few extra votes so he could win the Heisman on some big made-up story. You know, there's people that lose brothers and lose girlfriends and lose grandmothers. They suffer real trauma from the loss of a loved one every day. For some guy to manipulate the national media, I think it says a lot of bad stuff about that guy. And Notre Dame's gone out on a limb. Now, I know it's not against the law, necessarily.
Unless he had the law enforcement, but you're not going to have law enforcement go after a woman that's dying of leukemia.
We're not going to go after her.
No, but the point is, you don't call the police if someone has leukemia unless there's something about the leukemia that would inspire a criminal investigation. For instance, if someone had, however they would do it, someone gave you leukemia, I think then you would be within your rights to contact the law enforcement agency nearest you.
We don't need to talk about that.
Well, we don't need to, but you're saying law enforcement.
No, I said that's the only thing that this story, that this entire episode has not done, is draw law enforcement into it. All right, so, Coach, go ahead.
Go ahead, what?
You state your case.
All right, my case is this. Tui Asisopo is the name of a middle linebacker that played for the San Francisco 49ers in the 90s, and I'm not saying that this is the guy, but it's a name that is known in Polynesian circles. In football, in the world of football in the Pacific Islands, the name Tui Asisopo, Mosey Tatupu, these are some big names, and I forget, the guy that played in Canada, do you remember that guy?
No.
The Hawaiian by the name of Junior Kakagu'ua, it was a name that the Hawaiian Islander and the Pacific Islander names are very difficult to express or to understand, but yeah, you know what I mean. So the name Tui Asisopo, Junior Kakua Ahula, if you can just fill, because I don't have the name, just... imagine that that's a real name. I apologize.
Well, it's not his real name. I think it's Junior Ahu.
Well, that sounds worse than the one that I made up, which is Kakua, you know, and that one that I made up sounds realistic.
Whatever. We're not going to make names up here, Coach.
I understand.
Hold on. We'll be right back with Jersey Jenkins, former head coach of the Milwaukee Lions, as we talk here about this man, Monte Teo. That guy does exist. We know that. That's the only guy in this whole story that we know is actually a real person. Everybody else is like some mystery person. We'll be right back. Phil Hendry Show.
The other Hawaiian was Hula. I'll just say Hula Joe. How's that?
With Coach Jersey Jenkins, Jersey coached the Milwaukee Lions this past season, and joins us here on our Newsmaker line as we talk about Monte Teo, the football player from the University of Notre Dame, who had a great season, was a Heisman candidate, on a football team that was number one ranked in the country going into the national championship. They did lose to the to Alabama, but it was a good season all around for Notre Dame. And in the middle of all of this, the man announced, Mr. Teo, that he lost his grandmother and his girlfriend on the same day, as a matter of fact. The grandmother died of natural causes, I guess. The girlfriend died from leukemia. And the country football fans, college football fans, rallied around this guy. The school rallied around him. Sports Illustrated did a story on him. ESPN did a story on him.
You know, Phil, not to interrupt you, but you talk about, I hear you often on the program talking about feeling like a horse's hind end. I can imagine there's more than one sports editor in this country over the past week that has felt like the biggest horse's butt that, imaginable over this story. Now, that's coming from a guy who I want to believe that Monte is telling the truth.
All right, but just to finish the story here,
yeah.
He then announces that on the 6th of December, and he didn't announce this right away. He announced to Notre Dame on the 26th of December that on the 6th of December, he got a phone call that from this woman saying that I'm alive. I'm not dead. I had to fake my own death to get away from drug dealers. And I'm actually alive, and I want to start our relationship again.
Yeah, and I know you find that hard to believe. I think it makes perfect sense.
What about that makes perfect sense? But before we do that, that happened. But he didn't talk to Notre Dame about it until the 26th. And during that time, he was giving interviews with the media, talking about this woman. And I believe that this whole horse dung about how she called up and said she's not dead, she wants to restart the relationship, she had to do this with drug dealers, is a way to give him an alibi or to make the stories in the intervening weeks that she was still alive, that he was still mentioning her in interviews, make sense.
There's more confusion in the story you're telling, Phil, than the one that Monte Teo simply said that the young lady called him up and said, I'm not dead, I'm alive, but I had to fake my death because of transfer. Let me tell you about drug dealing. And in this country, drugs are being dealt, and people are buying these drugs, and they are smoking them or injecting them or whatever they do with them. I don't know anything about it, but I can tell you, as a teacher, I've had to use, and I say this with just, I've had to use a small amount of marijuana to know the effects. And I'll tell you something right now, Phil, I smoked just a very small amount of marijuana to know the effects, and I was just, my mind was filled with all kinds of wild hallucinations and crazy things I was looking at as I was laying on my back in bed staring at the ceiling, and I'm looking at all kinds of colors and multicolored rabbits and that kind of thing. So that's happening in this country, all right? And so these drug dealers will deal this stuff that makes people see these images, and no wonder they're going to threaten to kill somebody. If you can make someone... I don't mean to make a joke out of it, but if I'm laying on my back looking at rabbits dancing around on my head and everything, if I was a drug dealer, I'd kill to have a product like that to sell.
That may be true, but there's drug dealers, and then there are fake drug dealers. There's drug dealers, and then there's ways of using the stories of drug dealers to keep a phony baloney story going, you know?
Well...
I'm going to get it. Coach, this is Bud Dickman.
Yeah, Bud, go ahead.
You said you smoked a little bit of a marijuana?
Yes, I did. I smoked a very small amount of something called donkey D-word, I better not say. And then I also had a small, very small amount of BC, Bud, Matt. And I smoked that, and I tell you, I was out of my mind. I was half out of my mind. When I awoke the next day, it was a Saturday morning, and I was laying outside, and I was half out of my mind.
All right, but we're not talking about that right now.
No, I'm just wondering if you smoked that stuff. Would it make you make up a story?
I think you could make a story up. If you're telling me that Monte Teo smoked any small amount of the marijuana that I experimented with so I'd know the effects, if you're saying that Monte Teo smoked that, then he would have been half out of his mind. And his mind would have come undone. And you can make up all kinds of stories.
So now Monte Teo has made this story up as the result of drug abuse. Nonetheless...
I'm not saying that that's the case, but if he smoked what I smoked, and there's every reason to believe that he could get his hands on it and then some, I don't doubt he'd be half out of his gourd. But I don't know for sure. I don't want to call the man a drug user, not knowing him, and I certainly respect him, so I would say it's probably a dirty lie if someone says he smokes marijuana, but I wouldn't know because I don't know his habits, although I like to believe that he wouldn't.
All right, Jersey Jenkins, I'm going to let you go, and I appreciate very much you joining us.
All right, Phil, and have a good Easter. I think that's the next big one on the calendar, isn't it?
Yeah, it's going to be Easter, and then 4th of July.
Well, there's got to be something between Easter and the 4th of July, isn't there?
Memorial Day.
What's that?
Memorial Day.
Yeah, Memorial. So there's Easter, Memorial Day, the 4th of July. Well, listen, whatever you celebrate, whatever your religion is, have a wonderful time, Phil, and stay away from that marijuana that I... Stay away from marijuana anyway, but stay away from the marijuana that I was just mentioning, because your mind will come unglued, and I think that that's what happened not only to Monte Teo, but I think to the athletic department at Notre Dame and probably a few of the priests there.
All right, well, let's just stop while we're ahead here, because I don't want to start talking about the priests blasting up.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. That's a very good point. And let me tell you can I tell you one story?
Okay.
I'll tell you I sent away for this because I don't really have anything to hide. I've always been a guy who's up front. I sent away for a subscription to the New York Post newspaper. And I got back instead a PosTivac. Do you know what this is?
It's a sex thing for guys, right?
Yes, it's a pump. And I said, what about the guy? Can you imagine the guts on some guy sending me this? Like, I need this, okay? And I said to my wife, and she looked, she said, well, what is it? I said, well, I think you, and I demonstrated it. And she said, you know, whatever works. And I said, boy, you really, that hurts. My wife, Darlene, Phil.
Yeah.
I said, that hurts. And she said, what hurts? Me telling you you need it or that thing? I said, the thing, and I said, the whole experience hurts. And
all right, look, I gotta get going, Jersey.
All right, young man. But the point I'm trying to make is you subscribe to the New York Times, and what do you get? A penis pump. You see what I mean? That's how things get. I didn't lie. I said I want the New York Times or the New York Post.
How do you get a PosTivac, which is a sexual device to aid men with dysfunction, how do you get that when you ordered the New York Post?
Because PosTivac is P-O...
Oh, yeah, P-O-S-T.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go, P-O-S-T.
Right, yeah, but then there's a VAC, and there's no New York.
What do you mean there's no New York? I was just there.
Are you kidding?
Well,
there's no New York in the address.
Oh, you know what? You're making a good point, Phil. I would be a liar if I said that you weren't making a good point. I'd be a crawling liar, a liar, if I said you weren't making a good point. So you're making a good point.
All right, we'll see you later, Jersey.
But I would say that there...
Thank God. You notice I didn't say anything.
Yeah.
That's because you don't know anything about football.
You didn't have to know anything about football to interview that blithering idiot. Are you kidding?
Hey, wait a minute. That Jersey Jenkins, he's a football coach.
I don't care if he's a football coach. I don't care if he is a nuclear scientist. He was a blithering imbecile. And why you kept him on the air as long as you did, Phil?
I wanted to get his view. And I'll tell you something. We got his view.
That's for sure.
Well, it's a ridiculous view.
It may be a ridiculous view, but you know what? It's a view. And I like it. And I'll tell you something else. You're going to find out a lot of things about people and a lot of things about events when you hear from the individuals who don't make any sense, because you're getting all points of view. And I like to hear people try to make sense out of something that you can't make sense out of it.
Well, what does that tell you?
It just tells me the lengths that people that are defending this guy and the Notre Dame. Well, you know, I'm not ready to hang it on Notre Dame. But I just think it's really interesting because, again, we're dealing with a certain personality type. And I don't see this guy as a manipulative person like Lance Armstrong. Lance Armstrong is an abnormal person. Lance Armstrong is an abnormal person. He attacked and hurt people. He lied. He sued. He bullied. He pushed people around. He is a sociopath like textbook. This kid here has got some kind of a personality dysfunction. I don't know what it is.
So you do believe he's in this by himself and he concocted this whole thing?
Absolutely. Absolutely. When I read this story about this Tui Asisopo guy coming forward, I thought, well, okay, now here's a guy we can talk to and he's going to tell us the real deal, man, as soon as he stops his lying, and he'll get right to the real deal, and he'll tell us how this Monte Teo dude is he's covering for him. But guess what?
They don't even know if he exists.
Exactly. We don't even know if that guy exists, because we find out about his existence from some girl that was talking to a reporter and only recorded and wouldn't give her name.
Well, I just, you know.
Why don't you go have a pow-mow?
I think I will.
Good. All right. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show here and philhendryshow.com on this Saturday morning. I hope you have I'm going to have a great weekend. I'm getting in the car in about 6 or 7 hours and I'm hitting 101 and I'm going, whee! I'm going straight north to the city by the bay, San Francisco or San Frisco.
Or no, it is San Francisco.
Yeah. Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry
San
Show.
Francisco. Yes, yes. It's the village people.
You're listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Captain.
Well, it looks like you guys can't pull your little ha-ha joke on me.
Yeah, why wouldn't they have that?
I don't know. iTunes is not... iTunes blows, okay?
Yeah, you got iTunes.
I know I got iTunes, okay? But iTunes sucks. It just... it's... I hate it. And I, you know, I like most of the Apple platforms, if you'll pardon the expression. But I don't dig iTunes for a number of reasons. It's gotten big and bulky and cumbersome, and it's crap, and they don't have... and there's a lot of artists that don't want their music on iTunes. I think Amazon is 50 times better, and I'm going to begin to use Amazon, and that's just where that's at, man.
You want to use Amazon on now?
I buy books from Amazon. I got my Kindle. I love it. I love it, man. I use the Kindle on the phone. And, you know, I get it, because I just got done reading, because I'm a real... you know, folks, when it comes to books and when it comes to reading, you know, you're never... I'm not ever going to try to force my taste on my audience. I don't come in here talking, wow, I just read a fantastic book, Blood on the Moon, The Lincoln Assassination. You know, I've done a lot of reading about Lincoln long before the movie came out. Team Arrivals, all that stuff. But I don't come rolling in here and rapping. I mean, during the pre-show, sometimes I do. But I have my little world of reading, and one of the things that I do is I sometimes use the Kindle on my phone. Sometimes I use the Kindle on an iPad, and sometimes I'm reading a book. You know,
what do you mean? Oh, you mean the paper?
Yeah, the one made out of paper.
What's that?
The book.
Book.
Oh yeah.
Right. I like that. I like books. I like holding books, and I like looking at them and turning the pages, and I like that. But there are times when, you know, I want to lay in bed. And the great thing about using the Kindle is it's a little light, you know, so you don't have to turn a light on.
Well, yeah, I use that, and I don't wake up Frank, because by the time I get to bed, Frank is cutting those logs big time. He is snoring like an animal, like a freight train going south. And one night, because Frank and I had a king-size bed, so one night he was snoring, and I had laid on what we have, a little day bed in the bedroom.
What's that? What's day bed?
It's a smaller bed. that was across the room from Frank. And I got out of the bed and I laid down there because he was just really, it was almost like, well, it was like a steam plant or a large machine shop.
What was?
His snoring, for God's sake.
Oh, wow, okay.
That was, sounded like a machine.
Well, it was more than a machine. It sounded like a machine that had thrown a bearing. You know, so you know you've got machines that are whirr, and then it throws a bearing, it's whirr, you know, like that.
Okay, so in other words, Frank was snoring really, really loud.
Yes. So I woke up, and I was so tired that I just grabbed anything that I could and started throwing it at him.
What do you mean?
I mean, I was so tired I didn't want to get out of bed.
You didn't want to get out of bed and shake him?
No, I just grabbed whatever I could. I found pennies, I found a matchbook, I found a folded knife. I didn't throw the open knife, but I found a folding knife that was closed. I threw that, and I, believe it or not, I nailed him in the head with that. And so that got my confidence up.
But did it wake him up?
No, not even close. So there was still this whirr, clang, this machine, this grinding. All I can describe it is like a bearing that was thrown.
This is his snoring.
Phil, how many times do I have to say...
Well, Margaret, you're telling a story that sounds...
It sounds insanity.
Well, I'm telling you the truth.
All right.
So then I nailed him with the knife, and naturally, so I grabbed an ashtray, hit him with the ashtray. By this point, my aim's getting good.
Now, I just want to...
Oh, here we go.
No, can I just stop?
I was on a roll.
Go ahead.
So I hit him... No, you go ahead.
Well, I just... You've hit him with a folded-up knife.
No, I didn't say folded-up knife. I said a folding knife.
That was closed.
Yes.
You hit him with an ashtray.
Yes.
You hit him with a barbell, did you say?
No, a dumbbell. One of those small dumbbells.
Dad, are you kidding me? You wailed him on that?
Must have cracked his skull open.
No, he didn't even wake up.
Well, at what point do you stop throwing stuff?
I threw a table... And he still didn't wake up.
Now, wait, Margaret, you got to let me. I mean, because you got to understand. This may make sense to you. It may make sense to the audience. You threw a table.
It was a folded-up card table, and I picked it up over my head and threw it on him.
And he didn't wake up.
He didn't wake up. That's when I started to worry. That's when I went over, and I said, Frank, and he said, I've been awake through that entire... He was awake.
He was awake.
Yes. And I said, when did you wake up? He said, as soon as you hit me with the knife. And I said, well, why didn't you say something? And he said, because I thought it was pretty funny. And then he went back to sleep. So you see, it's personality types.
Margaret, of all the weird crap that I've heard tonight...
No, 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 Phil, no. You don't get to call my family weird and everyone else is normal.
No, no, not everybody else is not normal. But of all the weird crap I've heard tonight, Frank laying there and letting you hit him with folded-up knives, ashtrays, a bar, a dumbbell, a table, and he thinks it's funny.
Yes, haven't you ever, you've never had someone hit you with something heavy like a chair and laugh?
Never. I can safely say never. No one's ever hit, maybe if they hit me with a wet towel or something, you know.
Yeah, you're going to laugh. So I'm here with a towel, but a guy gonna hit me with a chair? I'll turn around and nail him chair.
Yeah, but don't do short of him.
Oh, sorry. I'll turn around and nail him with a chair.
No, you already did. I didn't. You know, I'm done. I'm finished. It's the weekend. Can I go?
You may go, because we've got no time left.
Thank you.
There's Margaret Gray. So, Frank, wherever you are, man, you're a tough nut, dude. I'll tell you that. I don't know how you think that's funny. He's laying there. He's awake, and she's throwing crap. I guess I'm laughing now. World famous Phil Hendry Show is produced by Dan Northcraft and me, Phil Hendry. And if you want a backstage pass, by all means, go to philhendryshow.com and grab a backstage pass. And with that, you are exposed to, if you'll pardon the expression, the world of Phil Hendry and all of the great stuff that we got there. Until Monday night at 10 o'clock Pacific, 1 o'clock Eastern, let that be a lesson to you. And have a very, very good weekend, guys.
Hendry.